Let us sing the last section of Sri Shupanishad. Hiranmayena patrena satyasya vihitam mukham tatvam pushana pavrinu satya dharmaya dhishtaye pushan nekarshe surya prajapatya vyuha rashmin samuhate jo yate rupam kalyanatamam tatte pashyami yo savaso purusha sohamasmi vayuranilam amritam athedam vashmantam shariram om krato smara kritam smara krato smara kritam smara agne naya supatharaye asman vishvani deva vayunani vidvan yuyoryasma juhuranameno bhuyishthante namaktim vidhema. So yesterday we studied the first two verses, mantras of this section. Does anyone remember what was the matter? What happened in verses 15 and 16? Yes, Shambhavi? Okay, this verse, so this was a very important verse because it showed the supremacy of the personal feature over the Brahman. Because we hear that the person is praying to the personal feature to remove the impersonal, which means that the person has power over that effulgence. Again, repeating the same thing. What did we say? What was the meaning of this repeating? That expresses his dependence. He has no other choice. He has gone. If it's a yogi, by his own endeavor, by his own practice, he has gone up to that point, but now to go further, there is no way. There is only one means to go beyond the effulgence, and that is surrender, which means bhakti, to recognize the Lord and to become his servant. That's the only way to go beyond. Mm-hmm. Yes? Navadu?
And in two mantras, he is repeating the same word, Pushan.
Pushan. Okay, that also is recognizing the Lord as the origin of his sustenance. Okay? What else? Soham. Oh, Soham. Soham as me. Okay, you'll tell that to the impersonalist outside. So how did we explain this soham? That the person first gives a prayer, please remove your effulgence so that I can see your form. And that's, he explains the reason why he wants the effulgence to be removed is because he knows there's a form behind. And then he explains, Prabhupada says that he explains the reason why he can see the form. Because he is, yes?
Well, he's saying that I have form like yours.
Yes, he's not exactly saying that I am you, but he's meaning that I am like you. You are effulgence. You are effulgence. Srila Prabhupada translates, you are effulgent unto the sun. Just like a sun, you are effulgent. And I am also like that. And as we know, the effulgence of the Lord is consciousness. The Lord is conscious, and the living entity is also conscious. The Lord has a form, and the living entity also has a form. And because we are like unto the Lord, that's why we can see Him. Otherwise we couldn't see Him. So there is here again the oneness in quality, which is explained by Srila Prabhupada. And not just a oneness in terms of being the same person. So yesterday we had some discussions over this oneness, because it's not so easy to understand, but it's oneness and difference. In one sense, Krishna is everything and there is only Krishna. So in one sense, we are part of Him. And we are Him in the sense that there is only Krishna. But at the same time, quantitatively, we can understand that there is an entity that whose energy is so powerful that it sustains everything, and everything else is but just a part of that. We are a part, we are not the whole. And because of the quality of individuality and personality, we can relate, we can interrelate with our own origin. We can interrelate with Krishna in a loving relationship, in a personal relationship. Okay. What we understand in the Upanishads is that the Lord Himself is the one who is revealing the Upanishads, the knowledge of the Upanishads. And most of the Upanishads, they are either in the form, they can be in the form of discussions. Most of them are in the form of discussions between the guru and the disciples. In this case here, it's not like that. It's rather a teaching, that the teaching is being delivered. So if we consider that it's the Lord who is delivering that knowledge, He is explaining things and He's showing us what to do. Like in the end, there is a prayer. So this is what is to be done. This is how to understand the Lord. You know, and this is the way that Krishna is presenting the knowledge. Another way to understand that is that the knowledge of the Upanishads is revealed to the sages, and they formulate it in a certain way, you know, which is practical for those who are going to need that knowledge and use that knowledge. So, Srila Prabhupada in Mantra 17, he explains who is the person who is making that prayer, but rather it means who can use that prayer. And that's two kinds of people. One is the yogi who has elevated himself. Prabhupada explains in Prabhupada 2, verse 17, that the yogis, the soul is entangled in the life airs on the very subtle level. This is explained also in Bhagavad Gita in the second chapter. The soul is entangled in the life airs, and the process of yoga, mystic yoga, is to, the yogi elevates the life airs from the lower chakras gradually up to the higher chakras, up to the Brahmarandra. And then from the Brahmarandra, He usually they explode the top of the head here, and the soul gets out of the body through the top of the head. But where is he gonna go? He will go where he wants to go. The yogi goes where he wants to go. And if the yogi is very advanced, then he actually goes beyond the universe and he reaches the Brahma Jyoti. So now, for him, this prayer is useful. That when he is at the point of reaching the Brahma Jyoti, he should pray like this, because if he doesn't, he will merge with the Brahma Jyoti. So to avoid the merging with the Brahma Jyoti and actually enter the spiritual planet, the yogi prays. And Srila Prabhupada otherwise explains that this prayer can also be used by a person who is at the time of death. Even though he is not a yogi, but a person who is at the time of death should also pray like this, so that he comes in contact with the personality of Godhead and the Lord takes him out of the material world and beyond the Brahma Jyoti into his own abode. So that's what Prabhupada explains, you know, two kinds of people pray this, make this prayer, the yogi and the dying person.
Two other uncommon things that I noticed here is, normally the mode of a person who prays is that of humility.
Yeah.
But here the person is saying that please reveal it to your pure yogi. He is addressing himself as a pure yogi. Another thing is, normally the prayers and invocations appear in the beginning of the writing, but here is the end.
Yeah, because Ishopanishad is showing us the whole way of first accepting the Ishavasya principle and then, you know, rejecting the false processes and so on, and then the conclusion is surrender. That's the progress of the Ishopanishad. And in terms of him addressing himself as a pure devotee, again, what the Ishopanishad is teaching here is, again, this is not like an expanded Bhakti Shastra. This is something which reveals that Bhakti is the way. So what is the way is Sat Dharma. It's pure dharma, which is pure bhakti. This is the way. So that's what is explained. Sat dharma yadrishtaye. So it means that, you know, the Lord will do that for the pure devotee. So the process is explained here. And also we will understand a little bit more in verse 70 when he says Om Krato Smara Kritam Smara. You will see the explanations of that. The Prabhupada gives very wonderful explanations why he repeats twice the same thing, what is actually meant there, and that will also give you more ideas why he says, please, you know, reveal yourself to your pure devotee. And one of the meanings, I can just give you a preview, will be that, as we studied before, we are half demon and half devotee. So he says, please forget about the demon part. Remember that I am your devotee. That's what Prabhupada will explain. Please remember what we did correct. So that's the spirit here. You remember what I did right, and please forget what I did wrong. And this is very touching. The last purports are very, very touching, and they are very, of course, Prabhupada is shedding the light, you know, of the pure bhakta on these verses. But that's why this is a masterpiece, this commentary on Ishopanishad. And you know, these purports that Prabhupada wrote in Ishopanishad, they are amongst the longest. So you see in Bhagavad Gita, usually the purport is one paragraph, two paragraphs, but this is very long purports. And you'll find that only practically in Upadeshamrita, there are some long purports, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Even in the Bhagavatam, most of the purports are not very long. But this is quite extended.
Especially the introduction, the Prabhupada, one lecture is contained all Vedic.
Yeah. Okay, so we will move on. Thank you for the nice questions. We said there was something left in Mantra 16, several things left in Mantra 16. And one was the explanation. The maintainer, Prabhupada explains, is Bhagavan. This Pushan is Bhagavan. And he gives a commentary which is just a rendition of Srila Jiva Goswami's Bhagavad Sandarbha, which explains the word Bhagavan. He says, the full potency of the Absolute Truth is not realized in the Brahmajyoti. And then he explains the meaning of Bhagavan. So did you see that? Jiva Goswami, who is always very expert at Sanskrit, so he cuts the word Bhagavan into three pieces. Bhagavan. So let us explore that because it's very interesting. So what is Bha? The maintainer and the guardian, which means the protector. So Krishna, Bhagavan, he is the maintainer, because we heard, this is the difference between Bhagavan and the Paramatma. The Paramatma is also a maintainer. But what does the Paramatma maintain? The what? The material world. Yes, the Paramatma maintains the material world. He manifests the material world and he maintains the material world. We are sitting here on the planet in a classroom. Why? Because of Lord Vishnu. He maintains everything. And we use it. We fuffle around, we go around. But he's the one who maintains the reality. So the Paramatma maintains the material world, and we heard of the function of Paramatma, that he awards the reactions according to qualification. He awards things to the conditioned souls, and one thing that he awards is their maintenance in this world, right? But this is according to their karma. So actually, the living entities, in one sense, you know, they work for their maintenance. They maintain themselves in the sense that they have to work for it. But when one becomes a devotee, then the system of maintenance is changed. And the Paramatma is no longer the maintainer. Who is the maintainer? It's directly Krishna. Krishna maintains, through the Paramatma, he maintains the material world. But personally, what he likes to do and what he does is that he maintains his devotees. Prabhupada many times told us this. You don't have to worry. You just work on the purity of your devotion. The purer the devotion, the more, because pure devotion means pure dependence. The devotee fully depends on the Lord. And the Lord, like a mother, Prabhupada many times explained the idea that the parents, they give more attention to the younger child, the one that's very small. The new child gets more attention. Why he gets more attention, Shivaratri? I can see your face looking at the mother. Why the small sister gets more attention than you? She deserves more. No. What happens?
It's her birthday today.
It's her birthday on top of it. Oh, nice. What? She needs it, yeah? She needs it. She is less independent. You are now a big girl. You can walk around, you can do your things, you can wash your clothes, you can do your stuff. But she can't. So the Prabhupada explains like this, that when the child is very small, when he's baby, when he's very small, the mother is always ready for him. And then when he's 10 years old, 15 years old, he calls and she says, I don't have time. Why she doesn't have time? Because she knows he can do it himself. Right? So becoming a pure devotee means becoming like a baby. Who at least, not that the devotees are helpless in the sense of not being able of doing anything, but in their heart, they have full knowledge of the power of the Lord and of their dependent state. So they are completely dependent on the Lord. They totally rely on Him. They don't want to be independent. They always pray, please, my Lord, do with me what you like. Please engage me in your service. Please guide me in my decisions. Whereas the karmi, he's independent. He thinks independently. He wants to do his own things. He's convinced that by his hard work, you'll become rich. So the devotee doesn't do like this. He doesn't even want to become rich. He says, my Lord, whatever you want for me, that is. And therefore, the Lord looks after him. And the devotee, why the Lord maintains him? See, the karmi, he makes a separate endeavor to maintain himself because he doesn't believe in what we studied in the invocation. That this world is complete and there is a complete arrangement for the maintenance of this world and nobody needs to interfere. But the karmi interferes. He thinks that if I don't work, I won't eat. Many times Prabhupada explained that the birds, they don't go to the factory, but they eat every day. What about the big elephants in the jungle who need 1 ton of specific types of trees, food, every day? Do they work for it? Do they plant the trees? No. Krishna supplies. It's planned. Prabhupada explains, when the baby comes out of the womb, does he have to think, what am I going to eat? When we come out of the womb, we are helpless and we can't think, where is it going to come from? It's arranged, Prabhupada said. As soon as the baby comes out, the mother produces milk. So the pure devotee, one thing is that he fully trusts Krishna, and then the other thing is that he has only one business, is to serve Krishna. He doesn't think in the morning, how am I going to eat, how am I going to sleep, where am I going to go? Well, he doesn't think like this. He thinks, Krishna, please engage me in your service. Make sure I have a full day of service. And he forgets about, where the food is going to come from. And because he's fully engaged in his service, Krishna feeds him. Krishna sees, oh, now he's hungry. Okay. So this is the relationship between the pure devotee and the Lord. That the Lord directly maintains him. Directly. He's not giving him the reactions of his karma. Bhagavan doesn't see, okay, in your previous life you fed lots of birds, so in this lifetime you can get lots of grains. He doesn't see like this. He said, no matter what you did in your past life, now you are my devotee. I take charge of you. So we have examples in our own lives how Krishna takes care of us. Right? Sometimes as a devotee, who was saying, she was saying the other day, actually she didn't say it, when she said she got burnt. After we heard the story, she missed one point in the story. You remember that Amrita Kelly got burnt with the sweet rice? And then she went to the hospital. And she told us the story about the suffering, but there was another story, part of it, is that when she had to recover, at the temple, the devotees, there was no proper facility for her to get the care. So she went home because her mother is a nurse. And her mother took care of her. But then the mother, the parents, they were so worried that thousands of dollars of bills, because in America medical care is extremely expensive. There were several thousands of dollars of bills, and the parents were flipping out that we don't have the money, you don't work, and these people in your Hare Krishna temple, you know, how are they going to pay? And they were so, so worried. And what happened is that when after a while, when she went back to the temple, and what something had happened, that in the hospital, her bills had been cancelled. So this is Bhagavan. We shouldn't think that it's by chance somebody made a mistake or... You know, this is Bhagavan. He paid the bills. He crossed the bills. So many of us might have this, you know, sometimes we really worry about the future, but if we serve sincerely, Krishna will maintain us. And the mentality of the devotee is also that if he doesn't maintain us, it's okay. Because maintenance is not our worry. Our worry is that we never want to be separated from Krishna. This is our worry, that we never want to be away from Him. And if we start worrying about our maintenance, it means we will have to leave Him. And we will have to go and work. We'll have to go in the material world. We'll have to work hard and only go to the temple on Sunday. So those who, there is a time in the life of the living entity when the living entity does not want to be separated from Krishna anymore. And he doesn't care what he will eat. He doesn't care where he will sleep. And when one achieves that kind of dependent mood, Krishna takes care. And sometimes he gives opulence, and sometimes he gives a hut, but the devotee is happy because all day he is serving Krishna. So this is Sat Dharma. When the living, so we cannot do this artificially. Prabhupada explains in 17 how there is a gradual evolution of the consciousness of the living entity through many species coming to the human form and gradually surrendering to Ishavasya and this and that. And ultimately, what is the ultimate realization? I am a servant of Krishna. And that's all what I do. So gradually one comes to this consciousness. And then Krishna reciprocates with full maintenance. He maintains his devotees. Sometimes the example is given of the Paramatma. The Paramatma he comes. He is in this world. He is here because of the conditioned souls. But for the devotees, Paramatma doesn't. Even Prabhupada said that in the heart of the devotee, we don't. If we one day have Paramatma darshan, we won't really see the four-handed form of Vishnu. We will see Shyam Sundar. Because our relationship with Paramatma is finished. We are not under Paramatma. If we practice devotion sincerely, we are not under Paramatma's laws. We are directly under Krishna. So this is the meaning of Bha that Jiva Goswami explains and that Srila Prabhupada also explains. And then what is the meaning of Ga? Guide. Plus, what else? Guide, leader, and creator. Three things. He is the guide, he is the leader, and he is the creator. What kind of guide? What guidance does he give? What's happening to Shakti Swarupini? She's completely out, gone, totally. What happened, Shakti Swarupini? She studies late in the night. You have to study in the day also, you know. Today you really like, sometimes you have a little nap, but this time it's gone. Okay, we'll make a little sound. Please stay with us. So he guides his devotees on the path of devotion. This is what he does. And he dissipates ignorance as a guide. This is what he does. He dissipates the ignorance and he, with the torch, lights the torch inside, and he shows us the path, the inner path of devotion. He shows us, and we know as devotees what he will show us. He will show us what our challenges are, what our anarthas are, and how to get rid of them, where to get the help. So this is what Krishna does. It's him. We shouldn't think, you know, when Krishna somehow switches on the light and we start seeing horrible things in our heart, we shouldn't think that we are going backwards. No, we should understand this is God. This is the guide. This is my guide. He is showing me the path. Here, you see, you have to go over these hurdles. This is where it is. You go over this, you go over this. And if we ask him how, then he will answer. So he is the guide of the devotee. And then, as a leader, what does he do? He awards the desired results of devotional service. Okay. And what is the desired result of devotional service? It's himself. As a leader belongs to whom? To his followers. Yeah. The leader belongs to his followers. He works for them. Except if he is a wrong type of leader who just works for himself, for his own fame. Otherwise a leader, a teacher, a leader, you know, he belongs to his followers and so on. So here we see that the Lord gives himself as a leader, he fully belongs to his devotees. And also as a leader, he receives their adoration. He's there, he stands for them. And he receives all what they want to give him. He's there for them. Then, as a creator, what does he do as the creator? Okay. As a creator means that He can create, he can do things, he can do the impossible. And whatever be the conditions which are due to our karma, he can change them. He creates, it means that he creates special favorable conditions for develop, so that we can serve. He creates the conditions in which we can serve. He puts us in certain conditions. He creates a service. He creates a temple. He creates this and that so that we can serve him. He creates favorable situations. And of course, sometimes he takes away what is unfavorable. That's also part of the Creator. Sometimes he gives what is favorable, and sometimes he takes away what is unfavorable. And we do not always understand what is unfavorable. So when he takes away, we don't always like it. Right? But he sees so much further than us. And when he sees that something is actually taking us to destruction, is actually an obstacle in our devotional service, then his name is Hari. People fear him because of that name. He's Hari, the one who takes away. And he takes away, but it is meaning that what he does, he takes away and he disciplines us also. He also creates situations of discipline for us, so that we change. If we are not able, because Krishna guides us from within, but if we are not able to catch on his guidance, then from outside he is going to take some severe actions. So this is all in his form as the Creator. He bestows all necessary qualifications to reach him. So that means also that not only externally he will arrange things favorably and all that, takes away the unfavorable, but inwardly Krishna is also going to give us the necessary qualities so that we can serve him and engage in his service. Many times we see, sometimes Guru gives an instruction. Okay, you go there and do that. And we think, how? I've never done that. How can I do this? I've never done this thing. I've never done this in my life. But if we follow the order, then we will find that within the order is the power to do the thing that Guru said to do. So this is the Creator. He will give the qualities inside. He will give it. So this is Krishna. And then there is one more thing. It's Van. What means Van? Every being lives in him, and he lives in every being. So what is that? Does every being live in him? Yes, Sanna? Everything is his energy. We are laying on him, we are part of him, we are his energy. The jiva is the marginal potency of the Lord. So in this way, we are within him. Yes, we are within him. And how does he live in every being? We could say, as Paramatma, he lives in every being. Yes, as Paramatma, he lives in every being. But Prabhupada actually says something else, that he lives in every being as the living force. He is the source of the power in us is the battery inside. Jivanam sarvabhuteshu. Yes, okay, yeah, yeah. So he is the living force within us. He is that force. So we live within him because he is everything. And he lives within us because he is the living force himself. And you should have seen in the purport, I don't know whether there is, did anybody become confused with something in this purport? Or nobody became confused because they did not read the purport? Shyam Gauri?
Yeah, there's I found two parts that don't quite correlate with what Krishna consciousness teaches. It sounds like a lie or something like that, or a misleading.
What was it? In which verse you are talking? Which mantra?
17.
Oh, in 17. So we are still on 16. Did you find something in 16? Yes, in 17 there is definitely something funny. And in 16? In 16 there is a statement which we have to apply our intelligence to understand. It's on page 121 if we have the same book. That means it's the page before last of the purport. And the paragraph begins with, when he talks of Van, he actually talks of the all-pervading feature of the Lord. Prabhupada says, the all-pervading feature of the Lord, which exists in all circumstances of waking and sleeping, as well as in potential states, and from which the Jiva Shakti, living force, is generated as both conditioned and liberated souls, is known as Brahman. Since the Lord is the origin of both Paramatma and Brahman, he is the origin of all living entities and all else that exists. So this is kind of a very highly philosophical paragraph. So the Brahman is the feature of consciousness which exists. The Brahman is transcendental. It's the transcendental consciousness that exists always, whether we are sleeping, whether we are awake, whether we are in deep sleep. It appears that we lose consciousness, right? Shakti Swarupini? But actually she was still conscious. So that pure consciousness that is beyond the three states of material consciousness, that pure state of consciousness that is the original consciousness. What Prabhupada says is this consciousness is generated, and this consciousness is the energy of the jiva. It is the characteristic of the jiva. It is what distinguishes the jiva from matter. Matter has no consciousness. The jiva is conscious. So that consciousness, Prabhupada says, is generated from the Brahman. The effulgence of the Lord is the consciousness of the Lord. And what we have to understand is that, as we know, that this Brahman is rooted in Bhagavan. So therefore Prabhupada says that ultimately we must understand that Bhagavan is the origin of our consciousness. But that consciousness is in the Brahman, and we are, our consciousness And when it says generated, again we should not take this in terms of time and space. It's not that it's generated means it's coming in terms of time and space. It's not like this. It is eternal. The jiva is eternally conscious. So it is in this way that Bhagavan, the Lord, is within the living entity as the consciousness, as the living force. Yes?
Sometimes talk about like eternally conditioned living. I've heard it mean like for so long, you know. So when it reaches a state when it becomes liberated, right? So in that state it reaches the it crosses from a margin from being a marginal energy into the eternal, part of the eternal potency.
Well, the jiva never changes.
So it's always marginal.
Yeah, the jiva never changes, but the jiva comes either under the material energy or under the spiritual energy in terms of control, because the jiva is always controlled. That's what we hear here, that there is the Lord who is the controller and the jiva who is controlled. So the jiva is always controlled. When the jiva is favorable to the Lord, then he is controlled by the internal potency. And when the jiva wants to enjoy himself and be independent, then he comes under the material energy. So that's why the example is given of the sand on the side of, on the edge of the sea. You know? That sometimes the water covers the sand, and that portion of land is known as sea. And sometimes the sea moves out, and that portion of land is known as land. So, yes.
But the internal potency is described as being the spiritual.
Yeah.
So even though the jiva is entering that spiritual world, becoming part of that spiritual world, it remains not. It doesn't become internal potency. It remains marginal.
See, actually, in one sense, the marginal potency is para-prakriti. It is the internal potency in one sense. It is the same, because in the Bhagavad Gita, it says there is para and apara. But the fact is that when we talk of the internal potency, we talk of the internal potency of Krishna. It's the total internal potency, and the jiva is the tick, is the fragment, is the part, is a part. And because he is a small part of the internal potency, he can either be under the control of the total internal potency, or he can be under the control of the total material potency. That's how it should be understood. Otherwise, there is only two energies, spiritual and material. The jiva is spiritual, but he is infinitesimal. So he is always controlled. Sometimes we feel like, you know, like actually the impersonalists, they want liberation, they want to become free. That's what Prabhupada said, it's an illusion, and it's the greatest maya to become free, because it's not our constitutional position. We can never become free. And when we become liberated in terms of bhakti, in terms of going back to Godhead, it's not like this, that in this world I'm controlled by the government, by the weather, by the mosquitoes, by everything, and I don't want to be controlled at all. Usually it's our desire. This is what we want. We don't want any control. What is this system of authority? You know, we don't like it. We don't want that control. That's why we are here. Because we don't want that control. So when we so to enter the spiritual atmosphere and go back to Godhead, it doesn't mean that suddenly you become a controller. We will never become controllers, because we are not. But instead of being controlled by the three modes of material nature, we will become controlled by the internal potency of the law. And the difference between the two types of control is that the control of the material energy, we resent it. It's against our nature. It works against our nature. We are eternal, and material nature gives us a body that dies. You know, it gives us a sense of bondage. We feel like this. We are called Baddha Jiva. The material energy binds us and gives us a sense of bondage. Whereas the spiritual energy fully controls us, but she gives us a sense of happiness and freedom. So the effect is perceived differently when we are controlled by the internal potency and when we are controlled by the external potency. But the control is there. Nobody is independent in the spiritual world. If you study the books about the associates of the Lord, you will see that they are very structured. There are leaders, the Lord is the supreme leader. And then there are so many leaders amongst the gopis. There are the group leaders of the gopis and the group leaders of the manjaris, and there are the group leaders of the sakas, and so many group leaders, so many groups and subgroups and subgroups and subgroups, and they all cooperate to please Krishna. So there is authority in the spiritual world. But everybody is happy to be a servant. That's one of his qualities, that's his character.
Us represents not the body.
What?
What does the word us represent? It's not
a body. Us?
Yes.
Us?
In us as consciousness.
Oh, he's in us as consciousness, yes.
So, what is that referring to? In what? The body? Or we are not the body, right? So, can you clarify that?
No, within the soul. We are talking of the living beings here. Yeah. He is the consciousness. Yeah. He is.
Is living force consciousness?
Well, the living force is the jiva. But the jiva's characteristic is consciousness. And it is that consciousness which moves matter, which is within matter and moves matter and is superior over matter. The Jiva Shakti, the living force, manifests in this world. Alright, so we'll move on to understand the next verse. The living entity is called marginal potency because he has the propensity to either go spiritual or material. And the reason for that is that the living entity is only a small particle of superior energy. When we talk of the spiritual energy, the internal potency, we talk of the totality of the internal potency, we talk of the internal potency of Krishna that manifests the spiritual world. And when we talk of the marginal potency, we talk of a fraction of the internal potency. And because it's a fraction, sometimes it can become covered. But otherwise, the living entity is spiritual. Okay, 17. Very nice verse. This verse, by the way, is chanted when we do the ceremony of putting the ashes into the Ganges or into the Yamuna, the funeral ceremonies. When we do the last rites, the body is burnt and then the ashes are put into the water. So this is one of the mantras that is chanted at that time. So this is an application, it's a use of this mantra. Vayur anilam amritam athedam bhasmantam shariram om krato smaram kritam smara krato smaram kritam smara. So here is the request. We continue with the prayer. Let this temporary body be burned to ashes and let the air of life be merged with the totality of air. What's happening? Now, O my Lord, please remember all my sacrifices. And because you are the ultimate beneficiary, please remember all that I have done for you. So here we said, we said it's either the yogi, Prabhupada says that somewhere, it's either the yogi or it's the person at the time of death. It's the yogi, Prabhupada explains. He says, the highest development of one's spiritual sense is described in this mantra. One should give up the material body, which will be turned to ashes. The yogis generally study how to control the airs of the body. The soul is supposed to rise from one circle of air to another until it rises to the Brahmarandha, the highest circle. From that point, the perfect yogi can transfer himself to any planet he likes. Okay? So this is, we can take that to be a yogi. And in another place, Srila Prabhupada says, the devotee prays to the Lord, this is page 127, the devotee prays to the Lord to remember his activities and the sacrifices he has performed before his material body is turned into ashes. He makes this prayer at the time of death. Well, we have to see that these books, you know, they are for all ages. So Ashtanga yogis in Satya Yoga, you know, they also, they are bhaktas. They are bhaktas, but they are means of, they don't engage in deity worship in Satya Yoga. They don't do deity worship. They don't do preaching. There's nobody to preach to. They're all yogis. And so they directly, you know, sit in meditation, remember the Lord.
That is their service.
Yes. All right, so what do we learn from this mantra here? First of all, what is the request? Please free me from the material body. You know, usually those who are at the time of death, what do they say? Please let me live a little longer. Please keep me in this body. At the time of death, the materialists who actually don't know that they are not the body, when the time of death comes, what do they say? They say, my life is leaving me. When everything starts going wrong and they feel the detachment from the body coming, they say, my life is leaving me. Who is me? The body. And you think, my life is leaving me. Whereas the enlightened person says, I am leaving the body. He knows the life is me. I am leaving. This body is staying here. So this one is an enlightened person here, says, and not only he knows that he's leaving the body, but he prays, please let it happen. Let me leave this body. And not only let me leave this body one more time and come back, you know, after a little while in another body. But we are actually here talking of the person who, after evolving through all species of life and all stages of consciousness in the human form, has come to his last life. And he says, let me leave this body for good, that I may never take another again. Let me leave this body. Let it merge back to the air. Let the air go to the totality of air. Let the earth go to the totality of earth. Let the water go back to the totality of water. I never want to return here. And then what else does he say? Please remember all my sacrifices. And please remember all that I have done for you. So we will be explaining this. Prabhupada gives two different meanings to that. The first meaning of Krato, Om Krato, he takes the Krato usually is the Yajna, the Yajna Dev, the sacrificial deity. When you do the Yajnas, then there is the Kratu, means it's the Krishna, I mean the Lord Vishnu, who receives the sacrifices. So here is the enjoyer of Yajna. He says, oh, enjoyer of Yajna, please remember, Smara, all my Kratam, all the what has been done by me, all what has been done by me, you know. So Prabhupada will explain this in different ways. What is it that has been done by me? It translates that as sacrifices, which means that sometimes I did the right thing and sometimes I did the wrong thing. And then the second meaning of Krato is the supreme beneficiary, that we understand is the Lord who receives our service. And you remember what I have done for you. What is it that I have done for you? That is devotional service. That which we do for Krishna, that is the devotional service. But the other things like the yajnas, which are part of the karma, yoga or whatever, they are more for ourselves. What I did for my maintenance, this is more this kind of things. What I did for my maintenance and so on, which I really tried to do according to your instruction. I really tried my best to maintain myself according to your instructions. But, you know, sometimes it might have made a few mistakes. So, we'll see how Prabhupada explains that further. So, what do we learn from this verse here? What do we learn from this verse?
We should die.
Well, we are learning to die, by the way. Yes, this is the last verse. Here we are learning to die. We should remember the Lord. These are lessons. I think you have this question in your question bank, that what are some lessons you learn from these verses? So how to die? We should remember the Lord. But technically, what does this verse tell us? If we take this mantra, we read it, what can a person learn from this verse? Yes, Sohan?
By taking shelter and thinking of the Supreme One,
we can deliver ourselves by taking shelter of the Supreme Lord. Yes? Sanna?
Like burning himself, like he's saying this prayer in a moment. he's in a sacrifice fire. Like, I could imagine it, that ladies who burn themselves after their husband died, they can say this prayer, like, let this body, you know. This is just the first thing that I, because it's like so moment in that moment, not like that it happened in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Oh. Okay. Down to earth. These were all good points, and these are personal lessons that we learn from these things. But now the simple lesson, the philosophical lessons that Prabhupada takes from this, is that the body is temporary. This, you learn from this mantra that the body is temporary, and that there is something else that stays after the body dies. Prabhupada writes in, I think, in the first paragraph, the end of the first paragraph, this mantra verifies the fact that the living entity exists after the annihilation of the material body. So this is the first lesson that we learn from this. And, okay.
And also that Lord will lead the soul to the right path after.
Okay, so we understand from this verse, the Lord will lead us, okay? Yes? That Krishna is the ultimate beneficiary. Mm-hmm. We should know that the Lord remembers, we learn from this, because he is asking, please remember. But actually, Prabhupada explained, he doesn't really have to ask him to remember. Krishna remembers anyway, you know. So this is one thing we should know, is that Krishna remembers. We can try to instigate him, but in general, he remembers everything that we do. Yes?
That's just something that I really love about this prayer, is that the devotee is actually asking him to remember. Because I would always think that that would be a lack of humility, or a lack. It's too intimate. You know, I remember everything I've done for you, it's like kind of demanding, but.
Yeah, remember, it's very intimate and it's very nice. There is a prayer by King Kulashekar that has a spirit a bit. He doesn't ask, please remember what I've done for you, but he's simply asking, please remember me. Because the process of bhakti is that we always try to work on shravanam, kirtanam, in order to bring smaranam. And who should remember?
We should.
Me. It's the devotee. I should remember you. Oh my Lord, I want to remember you. And we practice, and Krishna says, whoever remembers me at the time of death, he will come to me. So our whole life is focused on this smara. But here the devotee says the opposite. He doesn't say, please let me remember you. He says, please remember me. And this is the full dependence of the devotee, who understands that this remembrance of Krishna will come by the mercy of Krishna. When he remembers me, I will remember him. So King Kulashekar, he says some very beautiful verse, if I don't remember, if I will remember. He says, no, not that one. He says, Majjanmana palamitam madukaita bhare matpratnaniya madanukraha esha eva tvadhritya bhritya paricara kabhritya bhritya bhritya sya bhritya iti maam smara lokanata smara. And he says, if there is any anugraha, any mercy, if I have done anything for you, and even if there is any mercy that you wish to bestow upon me, then this is what I am requesting. I request you to please remember me. And then he signs, who am I? I am the servant of the servant, 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 7 times removed. He says, I am Britya, Britya, Britya. I am the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of your servant. That's me. Please remember me. So many lifetimes I have spent in this material world. And now I am thinking of you. I am from my side. I am thinking of you. I want to return to you. I am thinking of you. Please, my Lord, you also remember me and take me back. So this is very, very beautiful prayer. So the spirit of this one is kind of the same spirit. So we learn from this that we ultimately must give up this body. There's no choice. We are not this body, we must give it up. The Lord remembers everything that we do. If we could only remember that today, instead of remembering that at the last minute, we should remember it every day, every moment. Prabhupada said, especially when we are alone, we should remember that Krishna knows everything that we do, everything that we think. And another lesson that we learn from this is that at the time of death, we are helpless. We are totally helpless. We are fully dependent on the Lord's mercy. Because he says, remember what I have done. So I have done so many things in my life. Yes, I have tried to remember Krishna, but in the meantime, you know, I also did so many other things. I did some karmas, I did some vikarmas. I did so many things. And when it comes to the point of death, it's the test. And at the point of death, it's not, before death, I can always try, okay, I'll chant more, I'll do some more, I'll try to purify more, I'll try to burn some more karmas. But when the death comes, you can't add anything anymore. The bill is ready, you know. You can't add, you can't subtract. Whatever we have done, we have done. And you can regret whatever you like, but it's too late. It's done. Oh, I wish I had not done this. Oh, I wish I had not done that. Oh, I wish I would have fasted on Ekadasi. Oh, I wish I would have chanted so many. But it's too late. When the time of death has come, then you fold your hand and you say, Krishna, now it's all up to you. It's all up to you. And you realize that now I have no power over my destiny. It's all up to you. So of course we can cultivate the bhakti. That's what we have to do all the way. But when it comes to the end, and as Prabhupada said, at the end, you can't speak. You can't speak. Recently I went to the hospital in France. There was an old grandmother who was dying. Oh! And I saw, first time actually, that she was exactly having that thing. She was lying on the bed in the hospital and the mucus was filling up her lungs slowly, slowly. And she was breathing. And you could see in what, you know, situation the person was, suffocating with the mucus. Sometimes the mucus would come all the way to the mouth and the nurses would come and remove the mucus. She couldn't speak. She couldn't speak anymore. She could hardly breathe. So at the time of death, you know, the situation is very difficult. You know, we cannot, all the senses close down one after the next. And one is fully dependent, you know, on the mercy of the Lord. And of the mercy of the devotees who hopefully are around. And another lesson from this verse is that the Lord is expected to reciprocate. So we are still appealing. No, until the end, we are still appealing to Him because we trust, we have full faith that He will answer my prayer. And that's my only means of of attaining him is just that he will hear my prayer. Therefore, I am repeating again and again the same thing. Please hear me. So Prabhupada in his purport, he explains the change of body. And from the time we have been in the material world, we change body from one species to the next, and there is a time when we come to the last body. And there will not be another body. And Prabhupada explains something, of course, maybe you have seen that, also in the first paragraph, defeating impersonalism. Prabhupada puts it that the identity of the living entity is never impersonal. Why do we have a body? Where does this material body come from? Why do we have it? Why is there a form? Because the soul has a form, Prabhupada explains. The identity of the living entity is never impersonal or formless. On the contrary, it is the material dress that is formless and that takes a shape according to the form of the indestructible person. No living entity is originally formless, as is wrongly thought by those with a poor fund of knowledge. The other day I was explaining that if you go to a field, you will see the ground, the earth is just lying flat, formless. And as soon as there is a seed planted, then the living force within the seed is going to transform the matter. The living force transforms the matter. You know, there is a little seed inside the ground. And how does this seed become a plant? This seed is an active principle which is going to draw on the water, draw on the air, draw on the light, draw on the earth, and manifest the form. It's the living force inside that is taking form by using the formless matter. It's using the formless matter to manifest a form. Because originally, the soul has a form. So in this material body, Prabhupada explains how the body changes according to desire. According to what we desire, we obtain a different type of body. And the consciousness at the time of death determines the next body. The perfection of the evolutionary cycle through the species of life, the perfection is to actually stop the cycle of transmigration and to leave this material body forever. And that only happens when we develop a transcendental body. When our transcendental body is ready, it is developed. And how does it develop? By developing a relationship with Krishna. Because what is the transcendental body made of? It is also made of Satchitananda. And it is made of our feelings for Krishna. The form, the spiritual form, just as here, the material form is an expression of our desires. The spiritual form is an expression of our desire to serve Krishna. It's an expression of our feelings for Krishna. If a living entity loves Krishna as a friend, then his form will be a form similar to that of Krishna's form. A form with which he will be able to have friendly relationship with him. Able to run with him and fight with him. And if the living entity has a feeling, a loving feeling in Madhurya, then the living entity will develop a form similar to that of Srimati Radharani to serve Krishna as a beautiful gopi. So in that way, and if the living entity has a desire to simply be there for Krishna, then the living entity may take the form of a tree that produces beautiful flowers to enhance the atmosphere so that Krishna is always enjoying a beautiful fragrance. So according to the desire for service, the spiritual body is formed. So we have to develop in this way our thinking of love for Krishna, our desire to serve Him. And the more our desire to serve Him becomes intense, the more the material karma burns, and gradually the spiritual body begins to evolve. So, now Srila Prabhupada also explains he says many different things, that the bodies, he says, material nature displays wonderful workmanship by creating varieties of bodies for the living beings according to their propensity for sense gratification. And that's to satisfy their desires. The body that we get is to satisfy the desires. Somebody who wanted to experience the taste of blood, he'll take birth as a lion or a meat-eating animal. If somebody had the desire to fly, then he will develop wings, you know, and then he'll fly. And while over there flying in the sky, you know, then he will enjoy this, it's sense gratification, and be flying. So all that. The living entity who wants to taste stool is given a material body, that of a hog, by which he can taste stool. So it's according to the desire. So what we understand, if we see a hog, what we should understand, what was the desire of the living entity who took that shape? Pretty nasty desires, you know. So never think of that when you see stool. I wonder how it tastes. Then the next thing is four legs with a big groin and a little tail, and you are there in the sewage. So according, and Prabhupada says that in the living being, in the human form, you will never find the desire to eat stool. Oh. You won't get it, but in Kali Yuga, everything is possible. Two, 3 years ago, I read that the scientist had found out that in the stool, there are so many minerals, and nutritious elements. So they were wondering how to, instead of calling it waste, as we usually do, maybe we could collect all the stool and we could produce some eatables. This is Kali Yuga, the brain of the scientist. We are going to produce some eatables from the stool now. Yes? It's also, we develop, our consciousness develops throughout the life. You know, somebody who there is this example that is given of the it's throughout the life we cultivate a certain type of consciousness, mostly by our association. If you stay with drunkards all your life, obviously, what you're going to think of at the time of death? You know, if you stay with drug addicts, or if you stay with whatever, you know, so it's according to the association and according to what we do, according to what we remember. You know, some people, they have a normal life, they look like very nice people, but every time they get a chance, they put on some pornographic movies. There are so many like that. So many. You know, they just buy all kinds of funky movies, and as soon as they have 5 minutes free, they sit in front of the thing and they watch. So their consciousness is actually not fixed on what they do during the day, it's fixed on what they watch. They are just waiting for the moment when they'll go back to watch their movies. So at the time of death, what they will remember? At the time of death, it is said, I told you my experience, that we see all the flashbacks of our life, and what they will see is the movies. And they will obtain a form of life accordingly, you know, according to what they were watching and what they were, you know, they were developing attraction. See, many times it says we have to come to the point of asakti, attraction for Krishna. So we have to be careful for what we are developing attraction. Are we developing attraction for Krishna? Or are we developing attraction for food? Or are we developing attraction for stool? Or are we developing attraction for sex life? What are we doing? We have to be careful. Prabhupada says life is dangerous. It's dangerous, you know? Two things about that is, you will study that in the Nectar of Devotion. And the point about that is, the first answer is yes, we should try to develop our spiritual identity. But the second answer is that it cannot be done artificially. You know? So the first thing is to develop the service attitude. Because all the rasas in the spiritual world are based on dasya. Unless we have the service attitude, there is no further rasa. All the rasas are based on dasya. You know, all the living entities in the spiritual world, they want to please Krishna. Our thinking is, well, I would prefer to be a gopi. Oh, I would prefer to be a gopa. Oh, I would prefer to be a tree. Meaning it's self-centered. It's not that we want to serve Krishna, it's we think, oh, it would be better to be a gopi. Oh, no, it would be better to be a gopa. No, I think I would rather be like Yashoda. No, I think, well, I think, yeah. So, when, you know, we have to become Krishna-centered. This is the first endeavor for us. And all devotees are on different stages of development of Krishna consciousness. So it's not the same for everybody, you know. But one thing for sure is that the search for the spiritual identity in terms of thinking of what swarup I have and this and that, this search cannot exist until we have come to the level of being a madhyamadikari. It doesn't exist before that. We have to purify ourselves. We have to pass anartha nivritti. That is what is explained. Pass anartha nivritti. No more lust. No more anger. No more greed. No more illusion. No more jealousy. No more envy. No more, you know, all these things. When all these things are gone, then naturally, within the heart, some impressions will appear of their own. We cannot artificially develop that.
So if you stay in that state that you didn't reach the your swarup,
Okay,
but
so
then you continue your devotional life, next life, or
so. Two things about that. If we haven't reached such a high stage at the end of our life, what happens? So two things can happen. Prabhupada mentions that in the purport, Yoga Brashta from Bhagavad Gita. I mean, you continue next life, which is what has happened to us so far. Most of us were practicing in previous lives, and in this life we are continuing. So that's the first thing that can happen. But the other thing is also that in this age of Kali, our good fortune comes from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is our good fortune. Because of him, we have access to this kind of knowledge. Because of him, we have the chance to purify ourselves in this lifetime, in one lifetime. If we take this process seriously, we can go back to Godhead in this lifetime, only because of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he is the one who has the power to actually bless us with this Krishna prema, which includes the mood of the Brajbasis, the mood of interacting intimately with Krishna. He is the one. And therefore the process in the sampradaya of the followers of Mahaprabhu is that you simply follow him. You follow him. He is Radharani. We serve Srimati Radharani in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in this world. And by following Mahaprabhu, which means by taking part in his preaching mission, by teaching his message, by engaging ourselves 100% as his servant. And in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Kaviraj Goswami says, I am a servant of Lord Chaitanya. I am a servant of Lord Chaitanya. A servant of Lord Chaitanya. And a servant of the servants of Lord Chaitanya. This is my spiritual identity in this world. And that's all what I know. He has saved me. He has given me the holy name. And he has engaged me in this lifetime, in this material body, directly in spiritual activities. Because what Radharani does in the spiritual world is that she engages everybody in Krishna service. And what Mahaprabhu does here, because he's in the mood of Radharani, is that he preaches. He recruits everybody in the service of Krishna. So there is, and our service in this world, when we preach, we should understand that preaching is transcendental activity. And our philosophy is that by serving Chaitanya Nityananda, we will obtain Braja Prem. So that has to be understood very clearly, that this is the way that our mood for loving Krishna in the mood of Raja, this is how it will develop. When we serve the preaching mission with full sincerity, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will bless us with Braja Bhava. So therefore, and Prabhupada also told us that at the time of death, if we are a little short, Mahaprabhu will force himself into our consciousness. If we have served him, if we have served him, Mahaprabhu will force himself in our consciousness and he will give us remembrance of Krishna. He will help us. Ashtar was telling a story, and this is good for Mahaprabhu and it's good for Prabhupada, the spiritual master. If we are sincere servants of the spiritual master, but because of all the anarthas, because we are not that advanced, we could not progress so much, at the end of life, Guru and Mahaprabhu, they will help us. And we believe that. There is a story, there are many stories like this, of leaving, devotees who leave the body and go back to Godhead, and they were not that advanced to begin with, but at the time of death, they became advanced. And here in Vrindavan we have many examples. There is also this example of, I think it was Subal, one devotee who used to be a sannyasi at the time when Prabhupada was on the planet. And he fell down. He left his sannyas, and very badly he left his con, he left everything. You know? And in 1996, when there was Srila Prabhupada's centennial, one Prabhupada disciple from America, she made a special effort to recontact Prabhupada disciples who have, you know, were away. She made a special effort to try to recontact them. And somehow she found the contact of this person who was now just somebody working somewhere. And somehow she managed to contact, but it took some time before she could actually get to have a personal contact. And then by the time she got a phone number, she phoned and she got a woman on the phone. And that woman was a woman that he was living with. They were not even married. He was living with one woman in America. And the woman said, oh, she introduced herself. She said, well, I'm from ISKCON, I'm Hare Krishna, I want to speak with such and such person. And the lady said, oh, she said, it's too late. He died. She said, he just died recently. He died recently, and I was really, really wanting to contact, to have some contact with these Hare Krishna people. Because she said, you know, we lived together for some years. And from time to time, he would remember that he had told me that there was a time when he had met Prabhupada. And he was serving, and he was doing this, and he was doing that, you know. But he was not chanting. He was not doing anything of devotional activities externally. But he was remembering the time he spent with Prabhupada. And she said, you know, when he died, something very strange happened. She said he was almost in a coma for several days. He was unwell. He was kind of unconscious. And right at the time when he left, when he died, she said, he opened his eyes and he said, Prabhupada, you have come. And he left his body. He died. So this lady, she wanted to contact the devotees. But what Mahamaya is, the lady who was searching, she understood what happened. This is what happened. He had left Krishna consciousness, but he had served. And when he had served very sincerely. He was a very sincere servant. And he never forgot Prabhupada. And he was always regretting that I left. And he was engaged in sinful life. But Prabhupada did not forget him. He came and he took him back. So this is what the devotee knows. And not that we take advantage of this, but this is the reality, because we are really helpless. And we never know what will happen to our life. You think all the devotees who are blooped and who are no more devotees, they were planning to leave? They were not planning to leave. When they were devotees, they never thought they would leave. But by the force of their previous karmas, by the mistakes of some offenses, or by some curse or whatever, they left Krishna consciousness. It's not that they wanted to leave. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is very merciful, and we must understand very clearly what is the process of attaining our spiritual identity. Yes, this is our goal, and we should desire within our heart, Ayi nanda tanuja kinkaram patita mam vishame bhavan budo kripaya tava pada pankaja stita dhuli sadrisham vichintaya. This verse means, please take me back. Please remember me as your servant. Nanda tanuja kinkaram. And that kinkaram, if you study the Shikshastakam systematically, you will understand it doesn't mean this body. That kinkaram means who I am, which servant I am. What's my name? What's my place? What's my service? So this is very much our philosophy. But it's not artificial. And our main work is one, to serve Mahaprabhu, because he is our only hope. And to serve the spiritual master and to purify ourselves. And if we do that very nicely, then Prabhupada writes in Upadesha Mitta, everything will be revealed. Okay? So, Srila Prabhupada refers to the process of evolution and that the highest conclusion of evolution is to actually give up this body forever. Somebody had read something funny in this purport? Yes, Gauri?
When the world was full of water, the living entities took an attractive form.
When the world was full of water, Prabhupada is talking of the evolutionary cycle of the species. When the world was full of water, the living entity took an aquatic form. Then he passed to vegetable life. From vegetable life to worm life. From worm life to bird life. From bird life to animal life. And from animal life to the human form. The highest developed form is this human form when it is possessed of a full sense of spiritual knowledge. So when we read it, what does it look like? What does it sound? Darwin. It looks like, yes, Prabhupada today is defending Darwin. It's the Darwin theory. First there was water and then the land and the fish came out of the land and developed some legs. Seems to be the Darwin theory. I discussed that because I was shocked like you the first time I read it. I was thinking, what is this? Prabhupada never speaks like this. I discussed it with Bhakti Chaitanya Swami, who was teaching this book, and he gave different suggestions. He said two things. First of all, there is no confusion if you read further. Prabhupada explains clearly that the evolution is not an evolution of the body, it's an evolution of consciousness. The living entity passes from one body to the other. It's not one body that transforms into the next body. It's not like this. It's the living entity. All the bodies actually exist. So Maharaj was explaining like this that, okay, it may be that there are some times, you know, in the history of the universe that there may be, you know, some times when there is more or less water, so more or less fish. Another way he explained that is that maybe Prabhupada is just joking here. He's paraphrasing the words of the Darwin people. He's joking. He said, when the world was full of water, you know, because Prabhupada always had a very good sense of humor. So he's paraphrasing them, that when the world was full of water, the living entity took an aquatic form. So, but he is not defending the Darwin theory. He is explaining that there are different species. They live in different habitat, in different environments. But the actual evolution is an evolution in consciousness. It's not a transformation of the bodies. The highest perfection of such changes occurs only when the living entity is able to give up the material body altogether, as suggested in this mantra, and enter the spiritual atmosphere, when he can develop a completely different type of body, a spiritual body, which never has to meet death or change. So how does this... And then Srila Prabhupada explains that, yes, this is the perfection. So how do we attain this perfection? And Prabhupada explains the process of surrender and particularly the process of hearing and chanting. If we want to make quick advancement in the transformation of our consciousness, we should hear and chant. This is a very powerful process. The hearing goes straight to the soul. And the chanting is a deliberate attempt to contact Krishna. So when we hear Krishna. What is Krishna saying? Huh? What does he say? Come back to me. Become my devotee. This is what he says. So when we hear, this is what we will hear. Okay, we hear so many things, but the summary is Krishna is talking to us through the Shastra. And what is he saying? I am your Lord. You are mine. You forgot me. Please remember me. Come back to me. Worship me. Offer everything unto me. Please come back. Come back to me. Right? And when we chant, what are we telling Krishna?
Disengage me in your service.
Disengage me in your service. Please take me back. And when we talk of take me back in terms of pure devotion, it doesn't necessarily mean take me back to Goloka. I don't want to be here anymore. Because that is selfish. Why you don't want to be here?
Oh, and it's too cold, it's too hot. Especially too hot.
Yeah. So that's not pure devotion. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he expresses the desire, he says, Mama janmani janmani shvare bhavatad bhakti rahai tu ki tvayi. To go back to Krishna means to give up this material consciousness, to return to the mood of service, to be completely involved in his service, to think of him 24 hours a day, to chant his name, to hear about him, and to be in that mood of service. And this is the mood that we have to develop. According to that mood, Krishna will give us whatever. It's according to him. To some devotees, he will give service in this world. He will make them acharyas to preach his message. He will send them to this world, or he will keep them here, and they will serve birth after birth. And to some, he will take them back to Golok, and he will engage them. So what we need to desire is, please take me back, and which means, please take me back in your service. Please put me in your service. Never, never put me in the service of Maya. I don't want to serve Maya. I want to serve you only. And a devotee who has attained that kind of service is called Jivan Mukta. It looks like he is here, but internally he is not here. And he is not affected by the miseries of life the way regular people are affected. He's not affected. Yes, maybe he gets a leg cut in an accident or whatever, but he doesn't live the experiences the way that a materialist lives those experiences, because his consciousness is somewhere else. His consciousness is with Krishna, and he has an active remembrance of Krishna. So this is what Prabhupada is explaining here, that we should definitely take shelter in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, forget about this liberation idea, and simply serve with all sincerity, and Krishna will take full charge of us. Okay, there is one more thing to explain, important things to explain here. This thing about Om Kratos Marakritam Smara, Kratos Marakritam Smara. Why is he saying that, please remember my sacrifices, and please remember all what I have done for you. So the devotee, when he says all what I have done for you, it means remember my direct service to you. I chanted, I cleaned the temple, I distributed books. Please remember all the service that I have done for you. But then he says, please remember my sacrifices. So there are two different ways to understand that. One way that Prabhupada explains is that Prabhupada quotes Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the context of a devotee praying here. He quotes Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who explains that as long as we are not completely on the transcendental platform and completely pure devotees, which is very much the case with all of us, so there is still a material portion of our life. We are not just engaged in pure devotional service, right? We are not always remembering Krishna. We want to remember Krishna and we want to be engaged in his service, but there's also a little Maya on the side. Why? Because we are still identified with the body. So sometimes, even though we are trying so hard to just serve Krishna, sometimes we have a crisis of insecurity and we have to find money to pay for a life insurance. Or we have to take up a job, or because we took up to devotional life, but at the same time we have a family and we have 5 kids. And so not everything is exactly purely devotional service. You've got to feed the kids, you've got to work for their maintenance, you've got to clean their bum. And while cleaning their bum, you're thinking, okay, in which way is this pure devotional service? Okay, this is a living entity inside this bum, I mean inside this body. It's a living entity and it's a servant of Krishna. And therefore, it's definitely Krishna sent me a devotee, so this is a devotee. He must be meditating of Krishna. So therefore, my service to his body is just like service to the lotus feet of Krishna. All right, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. So in the details of our daily life, there are so many things that we have to do that are sometimes kind of remotely connected to directly serving Krishna. So the devotee tries to minimize the material activities and he tries to maximize the direct service to Krishna. But when we are sick, when we have to somehow maintain a house, so there are so many activities which are not fully, straightly devotional service. And we have to dovetail those activities and make sure that we do not perform them under vikarma. That's why Varnashram is recommended for the devotees to follow some of the principles of Varnashram, so that whatever activities are not devotional service in our life, we perform them without occurring reactions. We perform them in a way that agrees, that agrees with what Krishna wants. And while performing those activities, sometimes we make a mistake. What we call a sacrifice, what is a sacrifice? Something that benefits Krishna. What is a sacrifice? What's the meaning of a word sacrifice? To accept some voluntary inconvenience to achieve a higher purpose, for a higher cause. Meaning to give up something inferior to achieve something higher. So our whole life as a conditioned devotee is spent in this, in trying to minimize the urges of our senses and the urges of our mind which are torturing us. The senses are pulling. We want to serve Krishna. And the mind says, what about me? What about doing something else? Sometimes. A little bit. So we have this battle going inside us And the effort to win over the urges due to material nature, to our previous sanskaras, whatever efforts we make, that is called sacrifice. We sacrifice our sense gratification. The senses want this much, and we try to give them only this much. So that is called sacrifice. We sacrifice the enjoyment of the senses. We sacrifice listening to our mind. We endeavor to control ourselves so that we could engage in Krishna's service. So the devotee is saying, remember how much I endeavored. Please forget how many times I failed. Because sometimes we try and we don't succeed. Sometimes we try to control the mind, we try to control the senses, and we don't succeed. We fall. And this is what is the life of someone who is going through anartha nivritti. Going through anartha nivritti means you become aware of all the problems, all the obstacles, all the challenges in the consciousness, and you start working at them. And one day it works, and the next day, and one day it works, and you go like, ha ha, I got it. And the next day, boom. Next day finished. As soon as you get a little proud of your achievement, then the next day, you know, Krishna says, okay, do it yourself. And as soon as we have to control, because who is the controller of the senses? Rishikesh, not me. So, we have to learn how to depend on Krishna. But in the meantime, there is all this fight, trying to control the senses, trying to destroy. So this is our sacrifice. And the devotee says, please remember my sacrifice. How much I tried. I tried. So please remember that. Don't remember how many times I failed. You know, because then I'm finished. If that's what you're going to remember, then I'm done. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur also explains that for the devotees who carry on the life of bhakti but have not yet fully, you know, engaged themselves in that, and they have a part which is a karmic life. You know, they raise a family, they have a business, they have all this. So there's a part of their life which they are trying to lead according to the laws of karma and karma yoga. And whereas in bhakti there is never any mistake, you know that? In bhakti, that's one of the advantages of bhakti, is that there is never any mistake. Whether you chant the mantra with good pronunciation or bad pronunciation, Krishna takes the bhava grahi janar. And if you were not in a good bhava, then he takes the mantra. So he always takes. He's there. He's absorbing. He's taking. We heard he's more eager than us. We are not so eager to go back to him. Once in a while we become eager, then we forget. But Krishna wants us. Always. Nitya. He always wants us back. So whatever we give, he takes immediately, like a thief. You know, if the mantra was there and there was no bhava, he takes the mantra. If the bhava was there but the mantra was incorrect, he takes the bhava. Whatever he gives, I take. Because, huh? Yeah, the bhava was there and the
mantra.
The bhava was not there, the mantra was incorrect. But at least, Prabhupada said, the devotee was trying. The effort was there. The prayas was there. Prabhupada said, you know, he was talking of a scientist that was telling you the other day and saying that his search into the absolute, that was his devotion. So Krishna takes, he takes everything. So that's in the realm of bhakti. But when you go to the realm of karma, as soon as you make a mistake, then bang, it becomes vikarma. And then you have to pay the reaction. As soon as you don't offer the thing properly, as soon as you don't do the thing properly, you don't do the yajna to the kratu properly, as soon as it's little not clean enough, or the paraphernalia is contaminated, or the mantra was not correct, in that part of your life which is actually dealing with material affairs, if there is an incorrection there, then it's vikarma. And then you have to pay the reaction. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that, that the endeavor of the devotee is to therefore minimize the material things and increase the bhakti. And pray to Krishna. So Prabhupada, listen what he says, very nice. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains these verses in this way. One should regard a devotee of Krishna to be on the right path of the saints. This is on page 128. Even though such a devotee may seem to be sudhuracha, so there is some misbehavior in the devotee, a person of loose character, one should try to understand the real purport of the word sudhuracha. A conditioned soul has to act for double functions, namely for the maintenance of the body and again for self-realization. Social status, mental development, cleanliness, austerity, nourishment, and the struggle for existence are all for the maintenance of the body. The self-realization part of one's activities is executed in one's occupation as a devotee of the Lord, and one performs actions in that connection too. One must perform these two different functions along parallel lines, because a conditioned soul cannot give up the maintenance of his body. We studied that in verse 11, if you remember. The proportion, now listen to this part, the proportion of activities for maintenance of the body decreases, however, in proportion to the increase in devotional service. As long as the proportion of devotional service does not come to the right point, there is a chance for an occasional exhibition of worldliness. But it should be noted that such worldliness cannot continue for long, because by the grace of the Lord, such imperfections will come to an end very shortly. Therefore, the path of devotional service is the only right path. If one is on the right path, even an occasional occurrence of worldliness does not hamper one in the advancement of self-realization. So this is an encouragement for us to take the path of devotional service. Because when there are mistakes in devotional service due to the pulling of previous sanskaras, they are understood to be accidents. And because we practice devotional service, they will reduce and our devotion will increase. And the Lord considers that only. Whereas if we rely too much on the material side of affairs, then the mistakes have to be paid. Yes?
So what does it mean, like, when the devotional service increases, then it does it mean for maintenance of the body decreases? Like, I can understand, like, the supply of things, but, like, the actual part.
As I said, we become more dependent on Krishna. We become more dependent on Krishna. So we don't have to work independently for the maintenance of the body. And also in terms of, like, for example, you're supposed to, we are supposed to sleep a certain number of hours, eat a certain number of hours, and why we instead of spending 8 hours in sleeping, eating and bathing, why we spend 15 hours? It's because of the consciousness. Because we are not focused on spiritual life. So we spend more time in the bathroom once the shower is on. And instead of spending 10 minutes in the bathroom, we end up sitting there half an hour, 40 minutes, 45 minutes. Oh, what a nice bathroom. So these kind of things diminish as our consciousness becomes more sharp and we lose interest in the sense gratification of the body, you know. And so we become more engaged in devotional service. So the maintenance of the body becomes minimized. We will do the minimum time in eating, the minimum time in sleeping, the minimum time in bathing, and the maximum time in serving Krishna. Because we see the difference between the two. There is an exercise that always Adipurush Prabhu, he gives to his students in Bhagavad Gita. He says, today, you choose one thing that you do just for Krishna. Make sure it's just for him. You just do and go and do something. One thing is just for him. Because at the stage of consciousness in which we are, everything is kind of blurred. A little bit for you, a little bit for me, you know. Not quite sure for whom I'm doing what, you know. Because the dasya bhav is not very evolved, you know. Why you go to the temple? Is it for Krishna really? You can analyze your thing, or is it because somehow you have to follow some rules, or somehow, you know, you like to be there because it's a social affair, or, you know. Yeah? It's prasadam time, you go for prasadam time, you know. So we have to analyze our activities and see, is there anything that I actually do just for him? Just to please him? Just for him? Yeah. So that's the idea of decreasing what we do for ourselves. Because what we do for ourselves bring reactions. And what we do for Krishna, that is our karma. But Krishna protects us when we are devotees. He protects us from the reactions of the things that we do for ourselves. Otherwise, we would be lost.
Just like you, I had a service in the temple years back. I used to maintain kitchen. So Maharaj,
you used to do what?
Used to maintain kitchen.
Maintain the kitchen.
Yes. Yeah, so one time, Prabhu Maharaj, Prabhupada disciple, he came and said, Mataji, what did you cook? And I said, Maharaj, this. He said, choose only one day, cook only for Krishna, not for yourself. Then I started keeping result, class, increases me, see, I'm cooking for Krishna only, not for me, I'm not really doing this.
Yes.
So slowly you have this meditation, yes. Not for me, I'm cooking for Krishna.
Yes. There is the story of, I heard about New Vrindavan in America many, many, many years ago. When they, I don't know whether they still have that rule, but they used to have a rule for the pujaris in the pujari department in New Vrindavan, that the pujaris who served there, they were strictly not allowed to eat Mahaprasad. Strictly not allowed. Because otherwise we know what happens in the pujari department. Everybody is waiting for the little piece. You get one crumb, you know, once in a while, one crumb of Mahaprasad, and you see all the pujaris. Are you taking temple prasad and Prabhu? Yes, I'm taking temple prasad and Mahaprasad. So mostly there is a tendency that we derive some personal benefit from the service that we perform. So they had that rule, and I heard from the devotees who were there at that time how there was such a pure atmosphere in the deity department. The cooks knew that they would not eat the food. You know, otherwise it's very difficult in the stage in which, you know, you are cooking halavai, it's smelling very nice, you know. It's difficult to control the mind. you're not supposed to enjoy the food before Krishna, it's for him, but once the smell of the halava enters the nostrils and the saliva comes to the mouth and you go like, no, you know, but it's too late. So if one knows that he will not be eating it, then it will improve the consciousness a lot. You know? And many of the cooks, they cook what they like. They put the spice that they like, they put the thing and that. And, you know, they just cook what they like. So this is called karma yoga. You do it for yourself, and in order to avoid the reaction, you give it to Krishna. So this is karma mishra bhakti. It's not pure bhakti. Pure bhakti means it's done for him with love. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that this, you know, it will take time in our life before we come to the right amount of consciousness that these things will actually happen and we will not occur reactions for our activities. So we can work on that. Okay, should we go to the next mantra? Yes. I'm just expressing your desire. Acha, one last thing. Prabhupada writes, one should mold his life in such a way, this is the last paragraph, last two paragraphs, one should mold his life in such a way that he can engage in godly activities without wasting a second. Sacrifice means denying the interest of the senses. One has to learn this art by employing the senses in the service of the Lord during one's lifetime. One can utilize the result of such practice at the time of death. So this was this mantra. Now the last mantra, number 18, is surrender, the mantra of surrender. Agne, agne naya supatharai asman, vishvani deva vayunani vidvan, yuyodhyasmad yuhurana meno, bhuyishtham te nama uktim videma. So here there is a namaha, obeisances. This verse is taken to be direct, full-on surrender. Full surrender. So different things are pointed out by Srila Prabhupada in here, but let's first hear the translation. Oh my Lord, as powerful as fire. Oh omnipotent one. Now I offer you all obeisances falling on the ground at your feet. O my Lord, please lead me on the right path to reach you. And since you know all that I have done in the past, please free me from the reactions to my past sins so that there will be no hindrance to my progress. So, some people who comment on this Sri Upanishad say that this is a prayer to Agni, the god of fire, because it begins with Agni. Agni is the fire. Oh, Lord of fire. Oh, Lord of the fire. But Srila Prabhupada explains that this is actually this Agni here. I think he says that on the next page. Prabhupada explains that no, this is Krishna who is like the fire. Krishna who is like the fire. Prabhupada says, the Lord is addressed as fire, because he can burn anything into ashes, including the sins of the surrendered soul. So this is how we understand this address. O Agni means, O my Lord, who is like the fire. He's praying for the ultimate purification. Baladeva Vidyabhushan comments on this, that Krishna can be addressed by any of the names of the demigods according to the function that he is performing. So in this case, what is Krishna doing? He is asked to burn the sins. And because he is asked to burn, then his name is Agni. But it is the name of Krishna. Sorry? Yeah? Yeah. Nishupadishan. Yes. But my note says here, he has commented on Nishupadishan. And the commentary is available in English also. It has been translated by Bhanu Swami. But I must say that the commentaries on Ishopanishad, they make your eyes go, you know. They are very complicated. Srila Prabhupada's commentary on Ishopanishad makes things very, very clear. But it's useful to read those commentaries to understand certain things. They comment very nicely on Vidya and Avidya. And it's very nice. okay, so he's addressing the Lord, Agni. He's addressing him as the purifier. This is him, he's the purifier. Please lead me. He's addressing him as the leader. Lead me on the right path to reach you. He's addressing him as the Vidvan. Vidvan means the all-knowing. The all-knowing Lord who knows the path to go to him. I don't know the path. He knows the path to go to him. So therefore, he can guide me. He's the leader. He's the guide. We heard that. And why he's the leader? Because he's omnipotent. He's omniscient. He knows all the sacrifices. And he knows all the pure devotional service that we have done, but he also knows all the sins. That's why you see the smart devotees, it's the Vidvan. I know you know everything, but do you know everything? I'm just naked in front of you, you know? That's how it feels at the time of death. And that's it, you know everything. I can't hide. All my life I tried to hide a little bit this, a little bit that. But in this time it's not possible to hide. Neither I have the power to hide, nor I could hide in front of everybody, but in front of you, I can't hide. You are the all-knower. You know everything. So this is actually a mood of full surrender and helplessness. This is addressing the Lord as the purifier who can remove the hindrances on the path. And the last line is an offering of obeisances. And many, many obeisances, bhuyishtam, Prabhupada translates most numerous te unto you, nama. And uktim, it means words of obeisances. He's speaking right now, so he's offering these words of obeisances. So in this purport, mostly Srila Prabhupada is actually contrasting or explaining the gradual path and the direct path of devotional service, the gradual Vedic path of elevation and the direct path of devotional service. And how it, there is actually a progression of consciousness which starts from the level of karmakanda. He says the karmakanda, which is just following the Vedic instruction for one's own spiritual material sense gratification, he says this is the beginning of the path of self-realization. It's the lowest stage in that endeavor. And Prabhupada is showing in this purport how this path of karma is very dangerous. See, the karmis, they think they have it safe by following the Vedas. They think they can enjoy without occurring sin. But it's actually a very dangerous path. Because in this world, this is the world of the four defects. It's the world of imperfections. And therefore, while doing one's varnashram duties, as well as we can, the duties of the ashram, the duties of the varna, there will always be mistakes. So Prabhupada is pointing out the downside of that path, you know, the gradual path. So he said that actually we should, and another thing he condemns, he said also that in this path there is a kind of idea always that somehow or other we obtain things from birth, you know. This is very prevalent presently in Kali Yuga, this idea of the qualification by birth. That we are qualified by birth. You know? But actually, it doesn't work like that. Yes, by birth there is a certain qualification. Whatever it is, there is a certain qualification. But after that, as life moves on, it is up to the activities that we perform in this lifetime whether we are actually going to be living up to the kind of qualification that we got by birth or not. So in the example that is given, of course, is the birth in a Brahminical family, an elevated family in the context of Indian society. That one who takes birth in a family of a Brahmin, so of course he got that from his previous karmas. So in one sense, he is a Brahmin. Because from previous karmas, you got to take birth in a family of Brahmins. But just to take birth there, it does not ensure that the person is a Brahmin. Because after taking birth, one has to qualify oneself. Maybe in previous life he was a Brahmin, but in this life, it's not just by taking birth in such and such body that we actually have the qualifications of that body. We may take birth in the family of devotees, which is actually a proof that we have practiced bhakti in our previous life. But if we don't take up the chanting in this life, and if we don't follow the principles of bhakti in this life, then forget. We are not going to exhibit the character of a devotee. So Prabhupada is explaining these things, that actually we have to promote ourselves, and to promote ourselves higher and higher on the path of evolution. This Brahminical status is obtained by taking birth many, many times following the path of the Vedas, the progressive path of karma. Gradually, gradually there's a purification and one takes birth in the family of Brahmins with Brahminical qualities. But this is a very long process. Prabhupada talks of three processes in this purport: the karma and the jnana and bhakti. So he says in the karma marg is the most dangerous marg. Of course, it's the most practical for most of the people who are not in such high consciousness. But it's the most dangerous because any slight mistake and there is sin. So less dangerous and more effective than the path of karma is the path of jnana. It's the purification is more intense. See, in karma, what people do is basically they get rid of the reactions of their sins. They get rid of the reactions of the sins. But that doesn't remove the desires. It doesn't remove the desires. And before, because it does not remove the material desires, then there will be sin again. So that is the path of karma. You do something, and if you sin, then you do some prayas citta, you do some actions, Vedic things to counteract, and you get rid of the reaction. But the desire is not affected. The desire remains. And in the path of jnana, there is actually a purification of the mind. So in the practices of jnana purify the mind, and they actually cleanse the mind from the desires. But it is also dangerous, because the path of jnana also includes that you cannot engage your senses in sense gratification. And when the senses are restrained, and in the path of jnana there is no engagement in service. So when the senses are restrained, the path of jnana is you restrain the senses from sense gratification and you purify the mind through study and meditation. But many times the jnanis, they also fall. Because the intensity of the mental purification doesn't match the intensity of the vegas, of the demands of the senses. And there is a fall. So it's also a dangerous path. And besides that, it's very impractical for most of the people. Because the jnana man requires a highly evolved intelligence. It requires to control the mind by the intelligence. And in this age, most people just don't have it. Don't have the intelligence. Manda, sumanda, mataya. Mandamati, very slow brain. Very slow brain. So the jnana marg is very impractical. So Srila Prabhupada explains that. I'll tell you, it's on page 135. You can find these things. He says, the regulative principles are such that one who follows them is promoted from the platform of fruitive activities to the platform of transcendental knowledge. After many, many lifetimes of cultivating transcendental knowledge, one becomes perfect when he surrenders unto the Lord. This is the general procedure. This is the gradual path. And then, but, one who surrenders at the very beginning, as recommended in this mantra, at once surpasses all preliminary stages simply by adopting the devotional attitude. So I saw that you were studying the yoga ladder here. So bhakti, like, for example, the path of jnana, the jnana marg, cannot be taken up by a vikarmi. He cannot. Because his tamogun does not allow his brain to work. He cannot take up the jnana marg. But a bhakta, but the bhakti marg can be taken up at any time. It can be taken at the level of vikarma, at the level of karma, at the level of karma yoga, at the level of jnana yoga, at the level of ashtanga yoga, at any level it can be taken. And within our movement in ISKCON, we have the proof of that. That we have devotees from all kinds of backgrounds. We have devotees from vikarmi background, sinners, who come to Krishna consciousness. They were thieves, sex mongers, drug addicts, and they took to Krishna consciousness, and they are making advancement. And we have karmis, people who are into, you know, 50-50, you know. They are fruitive, but they are pious. Huh? So they like the rules and regulations. So we have this kind of people. And we have jnanis, people who are not at all interested in doing any seva. What they like to do?
Read.
Yeah, they like to read. They just read. I have one friend, she joined in Soho Street many, many years ago. And she was in the Brahmacharini ashram. And she figured that they would never give them time to read. There was the morning program, and then there was this, and there was that, and this, and that, and so much brooming, and cleaning, and distributing books, and blah, blah, blah. There's all these things. Naturally, bhakta program, you have to be active. So she couldn't bear with this. So she said, I would lock myself up in the broom's cupboard. There was a broom's cupboard, you know, where they put all the brooms and the cleaning equipment. So she got a torch, and she used to lock herself inside the broom's cupboards and ignore everything, and she would read for a few hours and then come out and get scolded because where were you? But so some people, they have to, they are just into the philosophy and the reading and the this and the that. And then we have yogis, and also they are impersonal. They can't relate to the devotees. They don't like the social functions, they don't like the morning program, they don't like jnanis. And then you have the yogis. How do you know the yogis?
Meditation.
Yes. You see them when they chant japa. They sit, 2 hours later, they get up. And they don't fall asleep either. So they are practiced in Ashtanga, and they became a devotee. So that's it. They can meditate, you know, while others go like their Gayatri. Which line was it? Wait, I was on the second line, third line, I was on the... Whereas the Ashtanga yogi hears each and every sound, Om, he knows the meaning, Bhur, Bhuvasva, he hears every one after the next, he meditates, the higher, higher, and the planetary system, fix the mind on the Brahman, okay, Tark is there, out of the body. And then, being situated beyond the body, which is where the first mantra leads, being situated beyond the body, then he starts sending his message. He's praying to Guru, Mahaprabhu, Krishna, with full concentration. So then that makes up for a very varied society. So this is what this verse here Prabhupada says, encourages us to take up the direct path and understand what the benefit of that is. And Prabhupada explains what the benefit is. In the other path, you are more or less on your own. But in bhakti, we are not on our own. In bhakti, there is someone else who is also working on us. Not only we are working, but Krishna is working from his side. The direct path, which involves the submissive devotional attitude, and Krishna takes charge. He takes charge and he gives the guidance. So Prabhupada explains, how does he give guidance? He gives guidance in two different ways, which we know is very easy. Krishna guides the devotees in two different ways. Yes? Yeah. From within and from without. So as devotees, we should be very attentive to what happens around us. Because from outside, Krishna is trying to guide us. And of course, particularly our guide externally is the spiritual master. The person who instructs. Then we should be very attentive, because that's Krishna. Krishna is instructing. When we are in good consciousness, or we are advanced, then we hear the Paramatma within the heart. He actually speaks. One time Srila Prabhupada, the devotees were asking him, that Prabhupada, how do you know what to do in such situation? You always seem to know what to do. How do you know what to do? And Prabhupada said, Krishna tells me. So the devotees said, so what do you mean that? You mean that you read and you find it's written in the books, or somebody tells you, or how do you, and Prabhupada said, no, he tells me. He tells me, that's all. Tells me directly. So this is the guidance, Prabhupada says. Such directions are given to the sincere devotee in two ways. One is by way of the saints, scriptures and spiritual master, and the other is by the way of the Lord himself, who resides within the heart of everyone. Yeah. Therefore, as new devotees, the only way we know what Krishna wants from us is that we follow the spiritual master. Yeah. For us, that's the safe path. And if we get a message from within, we should confirm. Because otherwise, yeah, it's the mind, and then you end up dancing in a disco with a sari on, thinking you're preaching. So. And the way to understand the guidance of the Lord is generally, for most of us, it is through the spiritual master. You can understand by this Ishopanishad, unless it is explained. If Prabhupada hadn't given his purpose, what we would do with this book? We couldn't understand anything. So the spiritual master, first of all, one thing is that there are two things about the spiritual master. The guidance is Guru, Sadhu, Shastra. Okay. So basically the first is that it's Shastra is the base, because Guru speaks from Shastra. So the Shastra we understand through the spiritual master. And the process is twofold. One fold is that the spiritual master has full understanding. So therefore, he can explain. And the next thing is that when the disciple is favorable to the spiritual master, when he's not envious, Om Saha Navavatu, when the disciple is not envious, when he's in a service attitude, in a submissive attitude, then what happens is that he receives the blessings of the spiritual master. And when the blessings are there, when the guru speaks, the disciple can understand. And if the attitude is wrong, then the guru speaks, but the disciple doesn't understand. So this is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam, in the very beginning of the Bhagavatam, the qualities of the hearer. The qualities of the hearer. When we hear, if we are not in good mood, then we won't understand anything. One time I remember there was a devotee who was giving class in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the Krishna Balaram temple that I knew, and I had a grudge against that devotee. It's bad, isn't it? He was a very senior devotee. And he was giving class, and I forced myself to go to the class because I knew that I have to go to the, I don't have a good relationship with this person and I have to go to the class, I must be there. So I went to the class and I was sitting there, you know, and the person gave class. And the whole time of the class, my mind was rebelling to everything he was saying. And by the end of the, I mean, not by the end, by the middle of the class, you know, and was itching here, itching there, looking here, I wanted to go. But I forced myself and I stayed there and I was like, oh, that's not logical. What's the reference for that? So I was going on like this. And then, okay, Jai Om Vishnu Patra, it was the end of the class. So I got up and I was just moving out, going down the steps in the temple. I was just moving out. And one devotee came to me and he said, Mataji, did you hear this class? He said, it was such a fantastic class. I learned so many things. This devotee is such a great devotee. He explained the verse so nicely. And I just smiled, and inside I understood that my attitude was wrong and I couldn't get anything from this class. I just couldn't get anything. But this person was innocent and he was fully positive, he was fully open, he was like happy, he loved the speaker and all, and he got full mercy and he learned so many things. So this is the secret of getting Vedic knowledge and of getting the guidance of the spiritual master. You will study that in lecture of devotion. It's called Priti Purvak Guru Seva. That there should be friendship, a friendly attitude towards the Guru. And then the Vedic literature is going to reveal its meaning to us. So Prabhupada explains this. Vedic knowledge is transcendental and cannot be understood by mundane educational procedures. One can understand the Vedic mantras only by the grace of the Lord and the spiritual master. Yasya deve parabhaktir yatha deve tatha gura. If one takes shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, it is to be understood that he has obtained the grace of the Lord. The Lord appears as the spiritual master for the devotee. Thus the spiritual master, the Vedic injunctions, and the Lord himself from within all guide the devotee in full strength. In this way, there is no chance for a devotee to fall again into the mire of material illusion. The devotee, thus protected all around, is sure to reach the ultimate destination of perfection. So from within and from without. Okay. The conclusion of this verse is in the last words. It's Prabhupada definitely is engaging us to is encouraging us to take up the path of bhakti, of hearing and chanting. Prabhupada said, "The Lord wants everyone to hear and chant His glories." Because why? One time I was hearing a class by Radhanath Maharaj, and he was saying, because some people they say, why is this Krishna always saying, think of me, worship me, offer everything to me, come to me, look at me. So Radhananda Maharaj was saying that people think, he's telling us to be selfless and see how self-centered he is. Why Krishna is saying me, 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 only me, maam ekam sharanam raja, surrender only to me, was saying he's such a selfish entity. How can you worship such a person? Maharaj was explaining, how can you worship such a selfish entity? So then he explained that why Krishna says serve me, surrender to me. Because Krishna is not selfish. Krishna is all-knowing. Krishna knows I am the root of the tree. I am God. I am the source of everything. If they worship me, they will be happy, perfect and happy. And if they worship someone else, they will always be miserable, and I don't want that. I don't want them to be miserable. I want them to be happy because they are mine, because I love them. For this reason, Krishna says, Prabhupada says, the Lord wants everyone to hear and chant His glories because He is the well-wisher of all living entities. By hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, one becomes cleansed of all undesirable things. And then one's devotion becomes fixed upon the Lord. So same as last time, you see the process, you hear, you chant, then you become cleansed, that's anartha nivritti. Then you become fixed, that's anartha nivritti. At this stage, the devotee acquires the brahmanical qualifications, and the effects of the lower modes of nature, passion and ignorance, completely vanish. So there are two ways to become a Brahmin. One is to elevate oneself gradually over many lifetimes through the gradual Vedic path of elevation. And the other is to become a devotee of Krishna. Because the process of hearing and chanting burns passion and ignorance, a devotee automatically becomes a Brahmin. The devotee becomes fully enlightened by virtue of his devotional service. And thus, he comes to know the path of the Lord and the way to attain Him. As all doubts diminish, he becomes a pure devotee. Srila Prabhupada ki, Shri Isha Upanishad ki,